Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from LA, coming to you live from FEMA region number 6. And today is November the 13th, 2018. It is a Tuesday. Have a live show for you today. At any time, if you'd like to call in, give us a call, 704-802-5056. 704-802-5056 is the call-in number for you to be heard, and would love to hear from you all today. Okay, everyone, please, let's continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. Please give some financial donations, monetary donations to the network. You can do it via its website. And the website, home website for this network is Black Talk Radio Network. All you have to do is find the overall donation prompt, hit the donation prompt, give some of your financial energy so that we will maintain the overall direction and the overall growth of this network. It needs that for you, for this to stay on air. It was started for you, and it has to be supported by you to maintain its overall ability to do that. You can also support the network by being a part of this social media platform. Social media platform is BTR Community. And BTR Community is where you can go and join as a membership for only $24 a year, one-time due payment of $24 per year, and you can engage in all of your social media activities where you don't have to worry about your identity being sold. You don't have to worry about being as adversely affected by the overall social media platforms as you would otherwise in Facebook, Facebook, and all of the other places, because they have actually are using their overall platform, monetizing their platform at your expense. And it is, that's what they're doing. That's why they're there. Black Talk Radio Network, BTR Community doesn't do that. You can actually engage in actually getting your overall views across, your point of view across, you could think about your business, talk about yourself within reason, and you could even monetize that. So definitely it's a better place for you to engage in all of your social media activities. It's the only place that I post information. So very important. Also, if you would like to acquire real money, now's the best time to do it. And there is a reason why the overall market is going the way that it's going. But definitely need to exchange your currency for money. Now's the time to do that. You can do that at Prosperity Mint. Prosperity Mint's a full-service precious metals dealership where you can exchange your currency for real money, and that is how you want to save, okay? Make sure that you email Prosperity Mint to let them know that you're a Tando Radio Show listener. I sent you, and someone will get in contact with you. You can email them at info@prosperitymint.com, info@prosperitymint.com, and someone will get in contact with you and explain to you the overall buying process. Very, very, very important. All right. So, wow, I thought I posted this. I did. All right, great. So we're going to jump into today's show, what's in the news, significant stuff. But let me, today's show, over-leveraged is the market's Psi Opus Sit. Psi Opus Sit, otherwise SOS. Now, there's different meanings for SOS, but in the Morse code sector, you know, SOS is just SOS. Actually, what it was actually created for in Morse code is that it's easy to do and quickly in case you were in trouble. It really doesn't have any real meaning other than you're in trouble. But so that does really have meaning. But the reason why SOS was picked for that, because the actual SOS doesn't stand for anything. Some people says save our soul, but that's not the actual Morse code. It can mean that because people, you know, now, you know, pseudo, that's the pseudo meaning of it. But actually, it was just in Morse code. It was just the quickest and easiest way to get a message in a time of urgency when you needed help. So, in other words, it does mean that you need, yes, you know, is a call for aid. And actually, and I put that as the overall title because yesterday in my travelings, I was hearing and listening to some financial stuff, and I heard the key words, which is actually a market SOS. Over leverage is definitely the market SOS, meaning that something is pending that's going to be huge, and I do definitely anticipate that. So that's a part of today's show, but definitely with some of the things that's going on in the world, it probably will switch because I want to talk about some impending problems that are going to possibly explode relatively quickly, and I'll get to that in a minute. I'll get to that in a second. Let me go through what's in the news, and then we'll fall into that and into today's show. All right, so first article I got from Sputnik News. This is from Sputnik News. Issue of sovereignty. Macron warns EU to be less dependent on the dollar, on the U.S. dollar. And so, and over the weekend with the overall so-called celebration marking the end of World War I, for only 20 years later for World War II to kick off, actually there was a lot of political jousting between countries, and the lines of enemies have now really been fully placed, and these articles will help you see that. Basically, Germany and France actually sees the U.S. as an enemy, and that not only as an enemy financially, but a military foe that I think that they will align together with to actually engage, and it's all being set up. So check out that next article from Daily Mail online. Trump criticized Macron again over Europe's defense remarks. And basically, the Europe defense remark, Macron said that they need to create an army to protect themselves from Russia, China, and the United States of America. We carried that last week, but it was actually came back up in a strong way. So check out that. Next article I got from Wolf Street, Fang Man. And this is very, very significant with the over leverage. Comes re-unglued. Debacle sink. Goldman Sachs, Apple, and oh gosh, not again, GE. So over leverage is huge in the market right now. And last I checked at the overall, today is the 12th day that oil has been in a downturn. I think it's the longest in market history for that overall downturn. So check out very significant in to really a measure of things to come. Next article from Jerusalem Post. This is how a war that no one wants begins. And they're talking about Israel in Gaza versus going against Hamas. That overall scene has reignited in a very huge way, and we're going to talk about some of that in today's show before we get into the main part. Next article from Israeli National News. Israel under attack, reported the IDF, giving the green light in Gaza. So the IDF was actually given the green light to start overall military engagements in Gaza, even up into a ground invasion, which looks like that is going to be happening within hours. So check out that. Next article, this one comes from, it's a Finnish publication, and it basically says Russia was possibly behind the GPS jamming that was going on during Trident, the overall military Trident turbulence, I believe. You know, it was Trident juncture during the overall NATO war mocking or exercise, military engagement with NATO. And actually what happened was Russia started jamming all of the GPS for Finland, Norway, and the allied NATO forces there. And it was kind of, in another article I was reading, it said it gave them a realistic scenario what they would be facing when none of their GPS and everything would be working. And so they were knocking that overall capability out during the overall Trident juncture exercise that just ended, but all of the military assets are still there, and I definitely think and can see that they're going to be used. And Israel in Gaza is a critical point that this could actually be a significant flashpoint. So check out that. Next article from RT International. Man, check out what celebrity figurehead Donald Trump said about Macron, or just about Germany in France in general. This is from RT International. And he says, let me just pull this up real quick, because I want to get the whole thing, not just read a piece of a soundbite. Have more of a... And so what happened is that, you know, Trump and Macron have been going back and forth, taunting each other just in publication and everything else. And then after Macron suggested building his own army to protect Europe against the United States, China, and Russia, Trump tweeted, he said, and this was, quote, but it was Germany in World War One and World War Two. How did that work out for France? They were starting to learn German in Paris before the U.S. came along. Pay for NATO or not? End of quote. And what basically celebrity figurehead Trump was saying is that if it wasn't for the U.S., France would be speaking German. They were actually already conquered by Germany, and they were going to start to lose everything that they had and learn to speak German. So check out that whole thing, and that is basically nothing more than shows the overall deterioration and where now the U.S. will be considered enemy number one of France and Germany and China and Russia and Iran. All of those countries are going to come together. They're definitely going to come together. So it's unfolding that way. So next article, got this one from RT International. A Saudi intelligence officer shocked after listening to the appealing tapes of Khashoggi's murder. And so celebrity figurehead Erdogan had released the overall tapes to Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia, United States, Germany, France, and a couple of other countries. Didn't send it to Russia. Huh. Wonder why, because they already had it. So releasing the overall murder tapes of Khashoggi so that they can listen to it. So basically it was letting them know that pretty much, and how that's going to play out. Done deal. Next article from Sputnik News. Merkel backs EU army plans. Europe must take its own fate into its own hands. So Merkel is backing France has called for a army, and they're going to provide and fund that with France. Basically, I will rephrase this, is that Merkel backs the EU army plans against the United States. That's really how that whole article should read. So never thought it would happen this way, but we saw it coming a long, long time ago, and we talked about the purge. The rest of the world would be purging itself of the U.S. Next article got from Free Malaysia Today. Warns of economic crisis if oil prices plunge below $70. And this is in Malaysia. Now, this is significant with Malaysia because the overall, some of the major banks, Goldman Sachs, is tied into a scandal, the 1MBS scandal, NDS scandal out of Malaysia, and that could have cross-pollinations to where over-leverage can start to move into place. And here comes the next, the true and the important economic collapse and collapse of the common man's economy. Is actually being adjudicated and with plausible deniability for those that created the overall crisis is now coming to full fruition. I can see it now forming, and it's in a way that is going to be apparent to everyone that it is happening, and that means the overall ramifications of it is about to be felt strongly. So check out that article. Next article from Sovereign Man: trouble brewing in Hong Kong. You may take a look at this one article in itself today. Next article, this is from Bloomberg, Bloomberg.com. Sell-off becomes the roughest since 2011 on the third leg of NASDAQ drop. That was from yesterday. Just wanted you all to see that. And then next article from CNBC, criminals, nothing but criminals. There's something behind this market sell-off that no one is talking about, the strong dollar. And that is a bad, bad, bad thing. And so hopefully Financial Friday, we need to cover this as to what that is. Next article, got this from Real Investment Advisors, the economic consequence of debt. Everyone here, if you're not familiar with it, get to understanding what the consequences of debt from this article is talking about. We probably need to do it, just run over this, and I will, because it's very, very significant, so that you can have a full understanding, a full grasp of what you're going to be contending with. So check out that article. Next article from Criminals, Nothing But Criminals, commonly referred to as CNBC. Trump's NATO National Security Advisor says tapes of Khashoggi's killing doesn't implicate Saudi Crown Prince. Of course he would say stuff like that. So check out that. But it's going to have direct overall global ramifications, even to the overall point of expanding of the war, which is happening now in that overall space of Gaza and Israel. Next article from Sputnik News. Hamas threatens to fire rockets at Israeli town if IDF strikes on Gaza continue. So that overall space is about to really blow up. And I get my overall, we got to talk about that. Next article from CNBC. CNBC, EU's efforts to bypass U.S. sanctions on Iran may be ineffective, John Bolton said. Whole war paradigm now, folks. This is where the economy becomes military confrontation now. The economy, economic measures are military confrontations now. So check out that article. Next article from Sputnik News. Swiss cuts off sanctioned Iranian central bank because of the U.S. Treasury. Check out that article. Next article from CNBC. Oil falls as Trump's what's going on here? Won't come down. Okay. Oil prices fall. OPEC supply cut plan. Trump basically wants OPEC to cut overall production, and they're not listening. They're not complying at all, because everything is war now, everyone. Oil prices fell by around 1% on Tuesday, and Brent crude slid below 70, and the WTI, West Texas Instrument, below $60 per barrel after celebrity figurehead Trump put pressure on OPEC not to cut supply to prop up the market. Yeah, he doesn't want them to cut supply. He wants them to put supply into the market, because by putting supply into the market, the sanctions would work. By cutting the overall supply of the market, that is actually means that U.S. sanctions are not working against Iran. So this is all a part of the war now, folks. Next article from CNBC. Jim Cramer says stock market is in a very serious correction, and there's nowhere to hide. This dude, I never take anything that he says for anything, because he's a celebrity, paid celebrity figure. But still, read between the lines on everything. Next article from Active Post. JP Morgan Chase trader pleads guilty to gold manipulation, turns state evidence. check out that article. We'll probably touch that some other time. Next article, very significant, from Veterans Today. Gaza Conflict Report, November the 13th, 2018. Gaza is on the edge of Israeli ground invasion. Yes, that is very true, and I think it will happen. And so that is an article that you should definitely check out. And I don't know, maybe I'll be able to. There's a YouTube video that I posted inside of, posted here inside of the chat room. Scotty, if you could just play that real quick. It's like a 1 minute and 28 second CBS YouTube video about some things is going on in Gaza. But I need to really talk to you all about this because it's very, very significant. It's actually the kickoff for a lot of things that's going on. So I definitely want to do that.
Whenever you get ready. Gaza and Israel are facing their worst violence in years amid escalating attacks by Israeli and Hamas forces. Hundreds of rockets were launched overnight as both sides exchanged fire. The deadly violence follows an apparently botched Israeli military mission in Gaza over the weekend. Charlie Daggett is in the Israeli city of Ashkelon near the Gaza border. Charlie, good morning.
Good morning. This is just some of the damage left behind after waves of attacks here in Ashkelon. Last night, a Hamas or militant rocket slammed into this house and blew a hole in the wall. Miraculously, everybody here survived. Ashkelon is very close to Gaza, which is within range of militant rockets. It's also where a rocket hit an apartment and killed a man inside. Now, here's the scene last night. The Israeli military says some 400 rockets were fired into Israel. The famed Iron Dome defense system was able to intercept more than 100. Now, this morning, Palestinians in Gaza awoke to widespread destruction from Israeli airstrikes and tank fire. Now, the Israeli military says the targets included a Hamas TV and radio station and the group's alleged headquarters. Now, both sides have been brought back to the brink of war after that alleged botched commando mission that left seven Hamas militants and one Israeli lieutenant colonel dead. Now, this morning, Hamas threatened to extend its reach to include further cities in what's already become the worst fighting this country has seen since the 2014 Gaza War. Nora?
All right, Charlie Daggett in Israel. Thank you.
All right, so that's a quick briefing, and I just want to give a little commentary to you all on this, because this is very, very significant. I don't think it is what it appears to be. I definitely think that, remember, in that whole area, you have to look at who's supporting Hamas and the junta fighters against Israel. And many are saying that is actually Iran that's in this proxy war that's supplying this whole thing. So there's a whole lot more to this and what is going to happen. So let me play this real quickly. This is no, I don't need to do that. But here's the significant things about this that where it will affect everyone here, in my opinion. This is actually, if you been listening to Tando Radio Show, I was kind of concerned about a couple of places that could spark off into a major military confrontation that can actually grow and expand and cross-pollinate into World War III and then into global nuclear war I, because all of the conditions and all of the environments are correct and all of the ingredients have been already mixed together and put into place and everything has been baked and now it's ready to be served to the general population. The economic situation, the global economic situation, the global geopolitical situation, the overall wealth transfer that is actually happening, the population of the planet is all a part of the many factors that go into, in my opinion, which starts major, major wars. So this 100 years since the beginning of World War the end of World War I, and 80 years to the beginning to World War II. And so I think that in our overall, for this moment in history, we will actually see World War III, which has already started. Now you're starting to see who is going to be on what side before the shooting completely and the military confrontations completely start out. So you can't have that happen until everyone picks their side. Germany has picked their side. They've sided with Russia and China. France has picked their side. They've sided with Germany. Wherever Germany goes, France is going to go. Okay? Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Israel, India, Mexico, Canada, all the EU, the European Union, Britain, Turkey, all of these countries have decided where they're going to go. And then all of the countries that I've named, only really one has decided to go with the U.S., and that's Israel. The U.K. has not decided to go with the U.S. They actually leaned towards going towards Russia and China, to the point where they actually were saying celebrity figurehead Trump is forcing them to do that because of his nationalistic views, his nationalism. And actually, the overall celebrity figurehead president of France, Macron, actually said about Donald Trump, without saying his name, spoke directly about Donald Trump. He said that nationalism is when patriotism is betrayed. And he was talking about celebrity figurehead Trump, speaking that their country and the region of their country has their experts in understanding when someone says that they're nationalistic, what that really means. And they were referring to their overall engagements with the Germans, with the Nazis. And so now those overall ties are severed. So now what we have, and I wanted to just to bring everyone up to speed, and anytime you'd like to call in, give us a call, 704-802-5056. Because it was starting in Gaza, that's going to extend into Syria, that's going to extend into the Ukraine, into Eastern Europe, it's going to extend into Russia, it's going to extend into the South Sea of China, is going to extend to Central America, into South America, into actual North America. There's going to be military confrontations. Everything is being set up, and it's now, it seems as if the overall moves have been, the bribes have been paid, and everything is now a go moving forward. As the Israeli, the IDF has been given the green light to do whatever they need to do militarily in Gaza, which means they're going to extend it into Syria. Significance of Syria is that Russia and Iran is embedded in Syria to protect Syria. Now, with this overall engagement in Gaza, is going to move into Syria because of this. Hezbollah and the Houthis are said to be actually supplied by Iran. So they're going to have to cut off those supplies to them that is coming to them via Iran and via Syria. And now the overall Israeli Air Force, the IDF Air Force, is going to have to interdict the supply lines in Syria. And guess what's going to happen now? Their planes will be shot down from the S-300 system that's there. And this is going to, this invasion that they're going to do, definitely going to do. I want to just read you this from Veterans Time. It's going to happen, and this is going to start the overall domino effect that is going to actually directly affect everyone here. Once the IDF loses this first plane, which I believe it will, in Syria from the S-300 system, they may be able to hit. They may have to hit some S-300 systems, but they're also going to lose. And then it's going to be all out from there. Once the Israeli Air Force is downed, it's going to be all out from there. So let me just read really quick you this, and then put it all together for you all. And now it's give you an opportunity to say, okay, what do I need to do for me and mine because of this? This is from the Veterans Today. The Gaza Strip is back on the brink of a large-scale Israeli military intervention. The current round of escalation started on November 11th when a covert unit, and this was the other day, this was on Saturday, when a covert unit of Israeli Defense Forces, IDF, opened fire at a patrol in the Hamas military wing in the town of Kushnish in Gaza Strip. The Israeli forces supported the retreat of IDF units by airstrike, and at least seven Palestinians, including a deputy commander of an elite unit for Hamas and lieutenant colonel of the IDF, were killed in the clash. Another IDF service member was injured. So basically what they did was this, is that Israel actually tried to go in. The word is that Israel tried to send some of their elite units into Gaza to kidnap this individual. But once the overall, they met contact with the overall Hamas forces, there was an actual confrontation, and they actually, instead of kidnapping the overall lieutenant general, lieutenant colonel, they actually killed him. Or deputy, he was a commander for Hamas. They actually killed him. And one Israeli soldier, a part of their one of their elite special ops groups, was actually killed, and another one was injured. So that started the overall, and soon as Israel did that, that's when Hamas started to strike within Israel with missile strikes. And so it just escalated and continued to escalate. Now, here's my overall assessment of this whole thing. Kind of knew something like this was coming. Since Syria was given the S-300 after they shot down the Russian reconnaissance plane, you knew that there was going to be a lull in the overall confrontation till they built up, and then that's when they actually took down some of their planes to try to retrofit them to be able to deal with the S-300 system. And then Russia said that they're going to be giving Syria the S-300 system, which was already there but wasn't activated. And so when they said they were giving them the S-300 system, it was actually already there. Because then they knew that if they said that they would be giving it, the likelihood for Israel and the U.S. to stop that would be that then that would mean that they wouldn't have that overall air support, and then they would now all of a sudden start something in Gaza to be able to move against. So now the U.S. and Israel was in a position of disadvantage, and they had to reposition themselves. And then once they did, think this when they said, all right, this is how we're going to start the whole confrontation. We're about to light the match in the Middle East. So they sent that overall covert unit into Gaza knowing that they were going to fail. Just by them entering it, they knew what the outcome and response was going to be. Do you really think that Hezbollah would not respond if you were trying to kidnap one of their deputy commanders and they wouldn't respond militarily? And then what happened? They actually had a firefight. And I think that firefight was actually intentional. So it would bring about outrage. They wanted some overall Israeli soldiers to be lost, in my opinion. Because then that is how they can propagandize this war even further, this engagement even further. So, once again, military individuals are used as cannon fodder, and boom. Now you had over the weekend, this whole thing starts to implode. In my opinion, here's what's really up. Let me just read this real quickly from the article. In response to the raid, Hezbollah launched at least 17 projectiles at Israel targets in eastern Gaza, and three of the rockets were intercepted by the Iron Dome. The IDF described the Palestinian retaliation as an act of terrorism and claimed that its covert operation in Gaza were not aimed at killing or abducting anyone, but to strengthen Israeli security. See what they did there? It was all set up. They said that their overall, when they tried to abduct or kill the overall, they did that for strengthening Israeli security. That is going to be the overall battle cry to start this whole thing, and it's going to turn into World War III. The incident triggered a massive hysteria within the Israeli media and political leadership, of course, because that was what they wanted, propagandized. With multiple reports and statements calling for a wider military action against Hamas over the past 3 weeks, the IDF has concentrated a notable ground force, including battle tanks and other military equipment near the Gaza contact line, amidst similar statements from top Israeli officials calling for an invasion into Gaza. An invasion into Gaza is, once that happens in the next couple of hours, when that happens, there's no turning back. In the evening of November the 12th, yesterday, Hamas kicked off a new round of rocket strikes at Israel targets by launching at least 80 projectiles. The IDF responded by a massive airstrike on Gaza in the framework and the efforts of the IDF intentionally destroying the building of a TV network, undermining the Palestinians' capability in the conflict. By November the 13th morning, today, Palestinian armed groups have launched over 370 rockets at the different targets across Israel, including some at the coastal, some on the coast of the Dead Sea. They avoided to strike the most populated areas in central Israel, meaning Jerusalem, but warned that if the IDF continues its actions, they can do this. Additionally, a unit of Hamas also targeted an IDF bus with an anti-tank guided missile. So IDF is saying that Hamas is saying that if IDF continues to attack them, they all targets in Israel are on the table now. And you already know, once one thing hits Jerusalem, that's going to be, I wouldn't even be surprised, that's when the Israeli forces and Israeli military will start to use tactical nukes. Stand by, stand by, stand by. Once that happens, and then there is a confirmed nuclear something going off anywhere, that can engage martial law, and it will engage martial law here in the U.S. Because if there's a nuclear device that is admitted to being used and a confrontation goes off anywhere in the world, that will actually start the overall move towards continuity of government here in the United States, which means martial law. According to the article goes on, according to the IDF, about 100 of the 370 rockets were intercepted. Meanwhile, the IDF has continued its massive strike on Gaza, claiming up to 100 military targets have been destroyed so far. So this is as of now, and as actually the overall authorities in Israel has given the green light for the military, and they've called up all of their reserves to actually, they've green-lighted the military to do whatever is necessary now. Whatever is necessary in the military's mind is to invade Gaza. Then not only invade Gaza, but to cut off Iran, which means that they may even turn this and then turn and start to attack Iran directly, and then attempt to attack Iran and Syria, where they're going to meet their biggest pushback. Because I would even surmise that the real target of this engagement is not Hezbollah, is not Iran, is Russia. And all of the military troops and all of the military hardware inside of Russia. Think the U.S. and Syria now is going to use this as an opportunity to get rid of all of that military hardware in Russia. I mean, in Syria, all of the Russian military in Syria. That means direct military conflict with the U.S. And it's been over 100 years since the U.S. and Russia has had direct military conflict on the battlefield. And the last time that that happened, the U.S. lost. So this thing is really going to escalate, and it's escalating quickly. And hopefully this will just be another slow-baked move towards the ultimate big push, because the big push will happen. Hopefully this is not the overall big push stance and that they're going to continue. But I definitely see if they make traction here, I don't see how the U.S. and Israel will want to slow. They want to remove the S-300 system completely out of Syria, because with that S-300 system, and the longer that system stays there, and the more overall and the better it becomes, the better equipped their overall Syrian forces and the more expertise that they develop with that overall system, and the more that overall system is there and allows the overall Russians to bring in more equipment, the more displacement that Israel is going to say that they're losing ground now. And so now they know that this is going to be a deadly, deadly confrontation, but they're willing to take it. So just looking at since this morning, IDF says detected 80 rocket launches from Gaza in 40 minutes. So this overall situation is currently in effect, and it is unfolding. So in my overall estimation of this is that the real target is the S-300 system and the Russians that's there. Because if they can displace the Russians, they can easily deal with, in their overall minds, they can easily deal with Iran. Here's the overall problem with this whole scenario. They're going to start this and catch heck in Gaza once they invade. Now all of this, every place in Israel is going to be targeted. And then that displacement is going to be where they're going to have to directly take out all of those threats to it, and that threats is going to extend into Syria. So the Israeli Air Force is IAF, sorry about that, Israeli Air Force is going to have to go into Syria. And like I said earlier in the broadcast, that's where they're going to lose some of their overall planes. And here's what's going to happen, in my opinion, with that. Then the U.S. will respond. Then there will be a response by the U.S. military, U.S. Air Force, with the Israeli Air Force. And then the U.S. Air Force will lose planes. Then what's going to happen then is that the U.S. will try to use, in my opinion, will try to use cruise missiles to take out those overall missiles. And that's where Russia will engage the overall vessels that are sending over the cruise missiles. We have direct military confrontation between Russia and the U.S. and Israel. Hopefully it will only be that planes are shot down, but I definitely anticipate that there will be naval vessels on both sides that will be hit and struck. One may be sunk, and when that happens, under that whole time, Israel will be getting hit, and then Iran will actually launch missiles into Israel will launch missiles into Iran, and then that's when Israel will use, in my opinion, a tactical nuke. And in between that whole skirmish, there's going to be a loud boom that goes off, and it's going to be heard around the world. And all of the world is going to look at and decide who was the aggressor in this whole thing. And they're going to establish who the adversary is. And this is going to cross-pollinate into the Ukraine. What's left of NATO will be asked to engage Russia and NATO is going to be minus a couple of members. They're going to bark, but they're not going to bite. The U.S. is going to bark, but it's not going to have any bite because it's going to need the full support of NATO in that. And this is where Turkey will say, no, we're no longer a part of this. We're actually going to, you were the aggressor. You started this, and we're going to go on the side of Russia and Iran and Syria. Man, this scenario is not good. Then, lo and behold, things could happen in the Strait of Hormuz. That will cut off oil to the world. Now, becomes a different program. And believe me, once a U.S. naval vessel is hit and significant casualties are incurred, or just hit, let alone sunk, if any U.S. vessel is sunk, believe me, Congress will be called in and they will be starting the overall process to declare war. Because the overall, from that, there will be a response to that immediately, and it will be so many events so bad that they will make the overall case, and there will be a calling for cooler heads and to try to, and it'll be too late. It'll be far too late. So this is actually what's being set for. And once Israel and Iran start directly have an engagement, Israel will actually send the Israeli Air Force to bomb certain targets inside of Iran, and Iran will use some of its missile capabilities to hit Israel. Once that happens, I definitely anticipate Israel using a tactical nuke at that time. That whole world will shut off. All the lights will be shut off from there. There will be a massive cyber attack on all sides in that area. Oil will not move. The overall tankers won't have the insurance to be able to move. And not only that, countries won't want to lose some of their super tankers and their tankers, because those things take a long time to build, and they don't want to lose that economic ground. So they're going to do what? Not move oil. So this whole thing is moving into a very, very hotbed of confrontation. And hopefully it doesn't happen, but if Israel does use a tactical nuke, and then all of a sudden you find out that Iran has tactical nukes as well, and then they use a tactical nuke, but just by Israel using a tactical nuke in that area, that will definitely move into World War III. Will be relatively short before it turns into Global Nuclear War I. The U.S. will actually declare war. Will actually declare war on Syria and all countries that are supporting the Syrian government, meaning Russia and Iran. And their overall engagement of that war, they will be asking everyone not to use any nuclear, that this will just be conventional. And all parties will say that they're not the ones that's going to be using, but it'd be too late because Israel will have already had used. And they'll try to de-escalate that whole thing, but it'd be too darn late. Here in the States, like I said, that will actually move into continuity. They would actually, the U.S. government would move into continuity of government. Basically, martial law would be invoked here and expanded upon. And that's where it would directly affect you. Not only will it affect you from the martial law standpoint, it will affect you because this whole space will be immediately, this whole, when this, as this, probably what will happen is that when Israel starts to engage Syria, you may only hear one or two incidents of that immediately, because then all of a sudden there will be major, major cyber attacks, and there will be major, major interruptions of the internet. Because the overall cyber war will kick off in a huge way. In a huge way. One of the reasons that they'll use the overall cyber spacing is because they have to be able to minimize overall targeting. And once we enter that space, y'all, whew, who knows? Who knows? So I'm trying to stay abreast as to what's happening there in Gaza. Hopefully this will subside. But we already knew that there was a buildup, and once Russia put that S-300 system there, that it was going to go into, it's going to go into full use. And in full use means that, remember what Russia, Israel said, is that they cannot live with the S-300 system being in Syria, meaning that they were going to challenge it, and they were going to try to take it out by direct military confrontation. Direct military confrontation means that you going in direct military confrontation with Russia. And then I definitely can see that Russia will use some of its overall naval capabilities from the Caspian Sea to use caliber missiles, and they will hit Israel with caliber missiles, and those things are really, really effective. Israel doesn't have really a response for that caliber missile, nor does the U.S. And targeting will become a rich environment. So, I will definitely stay up on this and try to stay abreast, but unfortunately, I hated to see that looks like Israel is going to go to the ground invasion. And one of the thing about when you do a ground invasion, you got to have air support when you do that. And if you're going to have air support, you're going to have to cut off the overall adversary's lines of supply, and their lines of supply go into Syria from going to Syria with Iran. Oh boy, not a situation that's good. And the market is already, and I definitely think that the market is already showing that it knows that this is actually going to happen. This is actually going to happen, and this is why there are major positions that people are willing to take losses off to unwind, because they know that they're over-leveraged. And if they're over-leveraged, that means that they're not going to be able to economically survive being over-leveraged. They have more liabilities than they do have the means to pay for those liabilities. Meaning, they're done. Now they're going to be scrambling to get rid of that overall time bomb and give it to somebody else. And anybody in the market is going to be keen and aware that, wait a minute, you're in trouble. Don't try to pass me anything. And it's actually an insult for you to try to even get me to buy your overall junk. We got our own problems. And this is where the overall economy becomes weaponized. Companies will start blasting other companies in the overall economic space, and it will be just as deadly as shooting a missile or firing upon a nation, because that's just how this rolls. So want to definitely check up on, hopefully see what's going on there in the Middle East. Hopefully it subsides. Today and tonight is going to be really significant in this whole engagement. So we will definitely see how this all plays out. So if you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056. And when we come back, I want to set up for today's show. I want to read something to you from Greenspan about the economy. I think it's really, really time for us to really understand and make sure that we're moving into protecting ourselves, especially from this whole overall war paradigm. We're getting ready to go into a commercial break. Scotty, give me 2 minutes. I'm going to check some stuff to see if anything has changed on the front there, and I think it has. It may not be a good situation, but we will be here for it. But anyone, at any time, if you'd like to jump in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056. We're going to talk about some of these things, and then some of the things that we need to be doing to prepare for this. Let's get in front of this so that when it comes, and most people here will be surprised by it, but you don't have to be surprised by it. You can be prepared beforehand. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave, from L.A. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056. 704-802-5056 is the call-in number. Now, what I want to do, I need to change this real quickly. Scotty, did you have something? You got, 4 minutes that I wanted you just to play something real quick, if you're able to do that, Scotty? If so, real quick, because I really need to get this point across to everyone, because when we look at it budgetary-wise and everything else, the U.S. military can't afford any conflict anywhere in the world. It really, really can't. And there's very, very specific reasons to that. And in these dynamics, you need to know, because they're not being actually told to the everyday person here. There's a assumption that the military is strong and well and everything else, but the reality of it, the actual economic numbers of it, even though the military is actually a lot of the budget is pushed, has the highest budget of all the countries militaries combined, is because a lot of that has been stolen and put into black projects and put into other situations. But the real reality of things, in the advent of what is going to be used in the conventional war, is going to turn into a actual nuclear exchange, and I think that nuclear exchange will be short-lived. The U.S. is not prepared for this conflict in any form and fashion. The Russians and the Chinese have actually been building their military correctly to actually defeat the U.S. Even though they all have their significant problems, Russia has a real, real skill problem when it comes to their military, because most of their military are conscripts. They're just there as body parts. They're not trained well or anything else, but they have segments of their military that is trained very, very well, but it's a small segment of it. But with that, they've actually built their overall military to be able to, even with those hamstrings, to be able to win. One of the reasons why they're able to do that is because Russia's debt situation is different. They have no debt. And one of the things that they do is they take the approach to build not with technology, but build with what works. And this is why their overall armaments throughout the world are more highly sought after than the U.S. They're not a Tesla and everything else, but the thing is, they don't turn around the corner and burn up, just start to blow up and go up in the flames. Spontaneous combustion from for whatever reason. No, their stuff is not as technically advanced, but what it lacks there, it actually makes up for with being able to be able to perform. It's performance based. So, have a Scotty, I posted something. If you could just play the first 4 minutes, just hear what some of the overall huge military obstacles that the U.S. now has. And it puts it in perspective of why you're seeing what's happening around the world. The rest of the world is ready now, because the U.S., its overall strength is now its greatest weakness. So, Scott, if you could, I post it there. If not, let me see. You may not be able to do it. Let me see. All right. So what I'm going to do real quickly, I think I can do it. Yep. All right. What I want you to do, just play the first 4 minutes. I want you to hear and start to put this together and think about what's happening here. Here we go. Hold on a second.
In the Department of Defense authored summary of the National Defense Strategy of the United States for 2018, Secretary James Mattis, quite succinctly sets out the challenges and goals of the U.S. military in the immediate future. He acknowledges that the U.S. had become far too focused on counterinsurgency over the past two decades, but he seems to miss the causation of this fixation in the first place. The United States engaged in costly and unnecessary wars, and when these wars were easily won on the immediate battlefield, the unplanned for occupations led to guerrilla insurgencies that a conventional military is ill-prepared to confront. The U.S. military and the defense industry were forced to find ways to adapt tactics and equipment to this new kind of conflict, thus shifting the main efforts away from fighting conventional wars against peer adversaries. Meanwhile, the U.S. political and military leadership, without recognizing and acknowledging its failures, has unfathomably declared the U.S. is now in an acute period of strategic competition with the other two strongest world players. The current situation can be traced back to a global power vacuum created with the collapse of the Soviet Union in December of 1991. Just scant months prior, the United States deployed military forces to Saudi Arabia as the backbone of an international coalition to confront and reverse the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait. This resulted in Operation Desert Shield, the greatest deployment of combined military forces on the part of the U.S. military since the Vietnam War. The conventional military power utilized by the U.S. was greatly effective. The first post-Cold War military humanitarian intervention conducted by the U.S. was the Yugoslavian civil conflict interdiction of 1995. At the conclusion of the U.S. intervention in the Balkans, which included the deployment of U.S. ground forces as part of multiple NATO-led operations, including Operation Joint Endeavor, Operation Joint Guard, and Joint Forge in Bosnia-Herzegovina, and the Kosovo Force, KFOR, the United States would de facto create the statelet of Kosovo. Although the U.S. military leadership was pleased with the performance of its legacy armored vehicles and weapon systems in both Operation Desert Storm and Operation Joint Endeavor, it was not satisfied with the amount of time required to deploy large combined arms units via available sea lift and airlift capacity. The complex logistics involved in mobilizing and moving heavy armored units did not lend well to rapid deployments. The desire to streamline U.S. military logistics and to create a fighting force that was more rapidly deployable, flexible, and yet maintained the highest levels of lethality, and that leveraged advanced information technologies and communication systems led to the genesis of the Future Combat System, or FCS. Embracing the FCS concept, the Army set very high deployment goals, which would prove to be unattainable. General Eric Shinseki, then Chief of Staff of the Army, stated that the Army would strive to attain the ability to deploy a combat brigade anywhere in the world within 96 hours, a full division within 120 hours, and no less than five divisions in 30 days. The U.S. Army would eventually pursue the FCS program, largest defense acquisition program in U.S. military history, with a price tag of approximately $200 billion. The program was eventually canceled in 2009, yet influence in transforming the U.S. Army has proven substantial. The United States military would become a force for invasion and occupation during the neocon era, spanning from 2000 to the present. By 2003, the U.S. was once again invading Iraqi territory, this time during Operation Iraqi Freedom. The Iraqi military was far weaker in 2003 than it had been in 1991. Ground operations of the invasion lasted from March the 20th until May the 1st, 2003. The initial victory was impressive, but it soon became quite obvious that there was no realistic and pragmatic plan to occupy the country and render aid to a stable and capable new government. What followed was a time of crisis for the U.S. military. When the U.S. soldiers were not greeted as liberators and a number of organized and ruthless anti-occupation insurgencies formed, some motivated by patriotism, some by tribal and religious factions, and still others by terrorist groups such as Al-Qaeda, soldiers tasked with the occupation of Iraq were woefully unprepared for the task. Convoys and patrols were increasingly the targets of ambushes by insurgents. Light vehicles and military transports were targeted and destroyed in significant numbers, and the crews had no protection from weapons ranging from small arms and RPGs to extremely powerful improvised explosive devices, or IEDs. The answer was to add armored protection to all existing vehicles, whether they be HMMWVs or the LMTVs and HEMMTs of the logistics units. Adding armor to logistical support vehicles are not meant to see frontline combat greatly reduced their fuel efficiency, great importance in the logistics arm, and was only accomplished at great cost. The U.S. Army only had one armored security vehicle in active service at this time, the M111. headquarters. The decision was made to armor the ubiquitous HMMWV and to give it the tasks of armored patrol, security, and a crowd control vehicle. A number of different armor packages were developed for the HMMWV, mainly to increase the likelihood of crew survivability. The armored Hummer was merely a stopgap until purpose-built armored vehicles could be developed and fielded in greater numbers. Although effective against high-caliber small arms, shrapnel, and mines, the M1117 was fielded in very limited numbers in 2003 with military police units, mostly in security duties on U.S. military installations. Large orders for the vehicle were placed after the 2003 Iraq invasion, and the number grew from approximately 50 to over 1,800 units in active service. Between 2003 and 2007, the U.S. military would suffer increasing casualties in both the Iraq and Afghanistan theaters of occupation. In the case of Afghanistan, casualties would continue to increase until 2010, before decreasing over consecutive years. Most of these casualties were the result of ambushes with IEDs. Such attacks increased sixfold from 2003 to 2007. The DoD would award billions of dollars in contracts for mine-resistant ambushed protected vehicles, or MRAPs, between 2003 and the present. Total acquisition costs of the various MRAPs ordered and put into service conservatively exceeds $45 billion U.S. dollars. The U.S. military has no less than seven types of MRAPs in service as of today, more than any other nation by far. As the U.S. has reduced its active footprint in both Afghanistan and Iraq, it has sold many of these vehicles to local security forces, and even U.S. domestic police forces, as they are of little use on a contested battlefield where the U.S. military would be fighting a conventional conflict with a powerful adversary. The U.S. military experience with occupation and counterinsurgency also resulted in an over-focusing of resources towards a traditionally elite, limited, and specialized subset of conventional fighting forces. Special operations. All effective modern national defense forces operate a small cadre of special operations units. These units are comprised of highly motivated, highly trained, and highly skilled soldiers who can perform any number of military tasks, but are specifically focused on asymmetrical, hybrid, and very specialized warfare subsets. Prior to the U.S. wars of occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq, the United States operated a robust special operations force comprising of units from all services. The considerable investments in these highly selective forces, the high standards demanded, and the extremely difficult training requirements have always kept these forces small. However, this has changed a great deal over the past 17 years. The need for soldiers with a skill set specific to counterinsurgency in Iraq and Afghanistan led to increased focus and demand on special operations. From 2001 to the present, the Special Operations Forces under the Special Operations Command, or SOCOM, have expanded from 42,800 to approximately 63,500 today. Special Operations specific funding has grown fourfold in the same time period, from $3.1 billion U.S. dollars to $12.3 billion U.S. dollars. According to SOCOM, an average of 8,300 special operators are deployed in missions in as many as 149 nations across the globe on a weekly basis, and 70 nations on any given day. This overemphasis on special operations has resulted in atrophying of more conventional combat forces. Secretary Mattis has obviously recognized the need to focus higher procurement towards conventional forces, as well as fund R&D efforts into developing a new field artillery. Rock.
Okay, so I wanted to stop it there and to pick this up, because I think this is very significant, and I wanted you all to know just what some of the things that are in contention for the U.S. military. And so, and this is, and the reason being is that the U.S. military is used to be the overall muscle to ensure that the economic prosperity or perceived the prosperity is held here in the U.S. And that overall mechanism has been completely dismantled and broken. One of the smartest things that Russia did to the U.S. was having the overall Soviet Union break down so that the U.S. will implode on itself by being the only superpower. Then they would have to realign themselves to much smaller confrontation. And in having smaller confrontations, they had to go through and change everything in what they did. And in doing that, not only did they have to change that whole thing. Remember, in this overall segment, they talked about the neocon era. Well, what does neocon really mean? You know, it's the Nazi era. So it's the overall neocon era of actually forcefully, with small units, small engagements, overwhelming force to actually invade countries, destabilize them, but not actually conquer them. And that takes a significant measure to do that. And initially, the U.S. was built, the military was built to engage in conventional or nuclear warfare with Russia. Then once Russia wasn't on the scene anymore, they had to do what? They had to get rid of a lot of the military bases were closed down. And most people didn't see that this was a psyop by the overall Russians to nullify the U.S. military. And it was a highly successful operation, because what they did was that they took the overall numbers and strength and the overall size of the U.S. military and used that to suffocate the U.S. military. Here's how they did it. By actually dissolving the Soviet Union, the U.S. would be the only superpower with no formidable foe, so they wouldn't be able to afford to maintain that size. So this is where the U.S. military started downsizing completely throughout the world. Then what happens was that proxy wars were set up in a small set facet, and then the U.S. would have to gear itself up to be able to fight proxy wars. Basically, their overall armament, when it was built to fight battles against the Russians, and so when it came to actually taking over towns and everything else, their overall military wasn't built for counter guerrilla tactics. So this is where they got their hat handed to them in Iraq. This is where they got their hat handed to them in Afghanistan. So they had to do what? Redeploy and re-strategize their whole deployment of their overall military personnel, and more important, the assets. The U.S. used to have battleships. Well, once the Soviet Union was gone, there was no need for battleships anymore. So they decommissioned those and dismantled those. And you know how long it takes to build a battleship? While the whole time Russia and China was not involving themselves in military confrontation, because they know one thing about military confrontation: it takes a toll on your population. So what they did was, by removing Russia, they had the U.S. be the only superpower. Then they had to engage in skirmishes around the world. And those skirmishes became small guerrilla warfare skirmishes. And they would have to catch up to being able to do that. And it takes a while to do that. So now they made some kind of headway to catch up to that. And then guess what? Now you go back to a superpower foe. And the U.S. military is not built for a superpower foe anymore. While its overall military personnel are mentally, physically exhausted by war. They spun them. They wisely spun the U.S. They made the U.S. use what it was boasting and had arrogance in its overall accomplishments, and they made that overall position a actual suffocating force, an obligation. And so what did the U.S. They ran them into technology and out of efficiency. So now the U.S. is built off of small special op forces. Small special op forces aren't going to be able to deal with the large-scale conflict. And I'm going to play later. You need to hear the overall naval side of that. They are now using the size of the Navy against the U.S. And man, it was masterful. The game of Go that was played. Go always beats chess. And they really have positioned the U.S. Now the U.S. military is going to have to be able to engage with a meaningful counterpart on the battlefield, and their overall setup and their overall assets aren't built for that. They're actually built for small ambush confrontations within a guerrilla warfare, because the overall tools in actual that they're using now on a battlefield against a large compatible equitable adversary can't do it. It doesn't have the overall range, and these heavy, it requires heavily dependent upon resupply. And this is where China and Russia knew that they would be able to kill the U.S. by the resupply lines. And the U.S. military wouldn't be able to get back onto par in enough time to be able to respond to what they would be able to do, especially in the cyberspace world. So the military has been basically budgetarily nullified. And this was a tactic from the ancients. Find what your overall enemy's weakness is, know your enemy, then use their overall strength as a weakness, and they will fight themselves. And it's really worked masterfully. Now, Russia and China has no Quans were saying that they're ready to go to battle with them. Because during that whole time after the Soviet Union fell apart, you didn't hear a peep from Russia. That's because they were preparing. You really didn't hear a peep from China. That's because they were preparing. And what were they preparing? They were preparing to have a consortium of nations all over the world to be able to cause for multiple fronts globally where the U.S. has military bases and military positioning, but they won't be able to resupply those. So the U.S. is going to have to decide which ones are they going to give up. Which one are they going to have to surrender? And ultimately is going to come down to continental U.S. Once that overall sphere starts to shrink, and once that influence continuously starts to shrink, it will go all the way, it will shrink all the way into non-existence. One of the things, in my opinion, one of the things the U.S., they should have known that this was coming, should have saw that, but because they were so arrogant, they couldn't see what the Russians was doing to them. And anyone that wasn't arrogant and didn't and was meek and didn't want to get into confrontation would have been able to very easily see what was being done. What was being done? What actually should have happened during that time in the 90s, the U.S. should have pulled back its overall global dominance, and it should have set up to have to encourage bilateral trades among countries and everything else. But no, they were inebriated in the wine of splendor. They got so big that they said no one can stand up to them, but they forgot the weight that they were putting on their knees, their Achilles, and all of that weight that they continuously had to bear globally. It became too much. Got played. Got outmaneuvered. And now you can't catch up. Absolutely can't catch up. Because it was really a multifaceted prong attack that the overall Chinese and Russians had engaged in against the U.S. Militarily was one. But the overall military engagement was with against the U.S. was to actually give the appearance of weakness to the U.S. And they fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. One of the things that they did economically was that they wouldn't challenge the U.S. in its overextending reaching hand globally and stealing resources from countries, establishing the overall payment system that was like a middleman system to where everybody had to pay the U.S. through the reserve currency status and through the petrodollar. Let them have that. Give that all to them. They will choke on it because what they're doing is they're creating debt. They're using debt to steal resources. And what's going to happen is the debt is going to choke them. Don't say anything to them. They think they're smart. Their arrogance has made them blind. Let them hang themselves. All we have to do is provide the rope. Watch. Give them more rope, they'll take it. Watch. They gave them the rope, they took even more. And the bad thing about it is that that overall culture of that rope taking has actually been spun into our community. And it is about to tighten. It's going to really, really tighten now. It's going to be very, very difficult where we're going to realize that, oh, shoot, we're over leveraged and overexposed. Listen, get ready to go into a commercial break. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056. I'm going to read you something from what over leverage can do to you and why it's so important never to be in an over-leveraged situation. Listen to Tando Radio Show. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056. 704-802-5056 is the call-in number. So here we go. There's a state of over-leverage that we're really in. And one of the things about over-leverage is that it basically means that you are going to watch your own demise. Because once that over-leverage reaches a certain point, there is no way to pull it back. It's gone. And that's really where the overall empire of the U.S. is. The actual critical points of over-leverage has been reached. And no matter what, you can't facilitate, nor can you solve the overall depth and leverage that you have against. Leverage is great when it works for you, but it's a beast when it works against you. An example of that I want to turn to, and I want to read you all something from something that Alan Greenspan, the former federal Fed chairman, Alan Greenspan, had wrote in the 60s, in 1966 to be exact. And most people today, if you see things about Alan Greenspan, they say, how bad he was and what he did with the overall 2008-2007 crisis and everything he didn't know. And And they try. But see, the thing is that they don't understand Alan Greenspan. This is why they say what they say. And I'm going to tell you, I don't trust any banker. But one thing about Alan Greenspan was that Alan Greenspan always gave you a real measure of truth. And if you knew who Alan Greenspan was, you know what he truly believes. And what he truly, truly believes is the opposite of what happened. But he realized he had no choice. And that celebrity figurehead position. He gave you all the clues when he was the Fed chairman. And he even played ignorant and naive to different things. Like, I don't know what's happening. He played that for a reason. Because the whole time while he was doing that, he was giving you clues as to the general population. When I say giving you clues, he was giving every common person here clues. But he knew that he's going up against an apparatus that was much bigger than him. So he had to be choice in some of the things that he did. Did I agree with everything he did? Absolutely not. But it doesn't really matter. When the man spoke the truth, that did resonate, and that does matter. One of the things that Alan Greenspan said, and I played it plenty of times here on Tanda, he told Congress, I can give you as much cash as you want, as far out as you would like it. Meaning I could create as much cash for you for as long as you want. But what I can't do is I won't be able to protect, I won't be able to ensure the purchasing power of the cash that I give you. And that was the biggest clue to every single person here in the world. And particularly in the U.S., continental United States, that you're living off of monopoly money, that you're living off of an imitation of money, you're living off of a false representation of money, you're living off a counterfeit of money, you're living off a promissory note, a piece of paper. There is no other Fed chairman that expressed that to you more than Alan Greenspan. But he had to do it strategically in an asymmetrical form. And he did. And a lot of people criticize him for what he did. But see, those individuals that criticize him have no clue as to what he was telling you. So what I want to do real quickly is I want to read you something from something that Alan Greenspan wrote in his Gold and Economic Freedom is what Alan Greenspan wrote. And this was published in 1966 in a reprint from Ayn Rand's Objective newsletter. And it was Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal, in 1967. And Alan Greenspan is notorious for creating the algorithms in which the system uses to this day to trade. He was known for that, but he was actually always a gold bug, meaning he always wanted true money to be the economic benchmark. So here's the article. It's almost hysterically antagonistic towards the gold standard. It's one issue in which the United States of all persuasions that seems to sense perhaps more clearly and subtly than many other continents, continental economic decisions. The gold and economic freedom are inseparable. That the gold standard is an instrument that each must apply and require of the other. In order to understand the source of their antagonism is first to understand the necessity to understand the specific role of gold in a free society, money is the common denominator of all economic transitions. Let me stop there. And the money that Alan Greenspan is talking about is not the piece of paper that you go to the store to use. It's mainly, primarily, the asset that you're exchanging that paper for in most places. Food is money. Certain other things are money. So if you're exchanging a piece of paper for an asset, there is money that is being exchanged, but is not the instrument that is facilitating the medium of exchange. Meaning this, if you are giving up an asset and taking paper in its place for it, if you are not exchanging that paper back into another asset, you have lost, because holding that paper is not money. So Alan Greenspan in the 60s was given a huge clue. Here it goes. Money is the common denominator of all economic transactions. It is the commodity which serves as a medium of exchange and is universally accepted to all participants in an exchange economy as payments for goods or services that can therefore be used as a standard of market value and as a store of value, i.e. a means of saving. So let me stop right there. This is why any person that talks about Alan Greenspan and talks about the crisis and all of that other stuff have no clue who he is and what he has been about historically. And the significance, he actually was trying to get people to be able to save themselves from this economic monster. Hear what he wrote. And universally accepted to all participants in an exchange economics as payment for their goods and service, and can therefore be used as a standard of market value and a store of value, i.e. a means of savings. Case in point, like I said earlier, if you're using pieces of paper to acquire an asset, that's great, you're winning. An asset is or money, you're winning. But if you're using a piece of paper and giving up an asset and not transferring that piece of paper back into an asset, you are losing, you are over leveraged, and you will be putting out an SOS like the market will be. Because as he says, as a means of savings, cash is not a means of savings. You transfer it out into a means of savings as soon as you possibly can. And this was why Alan Greenspan was so beneficial to him, to all of mankind, if they just knew the difference between currency and money. The article goes on. The existence of such commodity is a precondition of a division of labor economy. If men do not have some commodities of objective value which are generally accepted as money, they would have to restore to a primitive barter or be forced to live on a self-sufficient farm and forego the insurmountable advantages of specialization. If men had no means to store of value, i.e. to save, neither long-range planning nor exchange would be possible. Greenspan laid it out there. He basically said this, is that your labor is money. And if you're exchanging your labor for a piece of paper and you're holding that piece of paper, you are going to be in a insurmountable disadvantage. You will never, ever be able to successfully win and have prosperity that you can lay forward. Because of this, you're giving up an asset for a piece of paper and you're holding that paper. You're not exchanging that back into another asset. The system is giving you, see what the system always does, it always gives a piece of paper for money, is the best way to explain it. They're always exchanging, giving their paper for money, giving the appearance to everyone else that just having that exchange by looking at that overall cash, thinking that that's money and that's what they should hold on to. It's deceptive in all nature. Once again, the existence of such a commodity is a precondition of a division of a labor economy. If men do not have some commodity or objective value which was generally acceptable as money, they would have to restore to primitive borrowing. Basically, what he is saying is this. If you are in a modern technical workplace and they're giving you cryptocurrency, they're giving you just regular cash, they're giving you direct deposit, they're giving you cash and everything else, and you're not exchanging that into a true commodity of objective value, you are being a slave to the economic system because you're giving up your commodity and objective value to the system for nothing in return. And if you're doing that, then you need to quickly move back to the primitive bartering system. And the primitive bartering system was that you would not accept the piece of paper for something of value. If you wanted to accept something of value, that means you had to give something of value. If you wanted to have some food, let's say you wanted to have some cattle, then you needed to give up some land for that overall cattle so that the other person would cattle. They can graze their overall cattle. Now you have the overall cattle as well. There's a fair exchange, money for money. Not money for a decorative piece of paper with scriptions and signatures and just writings all over it. You can't use that overall scription to have any measure of wealth. So, so important. You're being over-leveraged. And your over-leveragedness is going to require that you put in an SOS. And this is what the market continuously does, and the education that we're given actually keeps us in this overall situation of demise. So Alan Greenspan said you need to go back to a primitive bartering system or be forced to live on a self-sufficient farm and forego the insurmountable advantages of specialization. What is the insurmountable advantages of specialization? He's talking about give up the overall civilized world in all of this comfort, because you may be comfortable, but you're over leveraged. Get on a sustainable, self-sufficient farm. That way you'll have an inheritance that you can live off of and use as an inheritance to pass forward in prosperity. If men had no means to store value, to save, neither long-range planning nor exchange would be possible. If men had no means to store value, i.e. to save, neither long-range planning nor exchange would be possible. He's basically saying without that overall system, you don't have a future. And he's right. He was absolutely right. The article goes on before we end out the show. Very important. What medium of exchange would be acceptable to all participants in an economy that is not determined, arbitrarily first. The medium of exchange should be durable. In a primitive society of meager wealth, wheat might be sufficiently durable to serve as a medium of exchange, since all exchange would occur only during and immediately after the harvest, leaving no value surplus to be stored. Basically saying that wheat is a form of money, but is not the most perfect form of money because it has a season and it's not storable. So you would lose value over time. See, money has value. And there's different forms of it. But where storing a value is considerably important, as they are in richer and more civilized societies, the medium of exchange must be a durable commodity, usually a metal. A metal is generally chosen because it's homogeneity and divisibility. Every unit is the same in every other as every other, and it can be blended or formed into any quantity. This is where it goes into where now you can make it is divisible. Precious jewels, for examples, are neither harmonious nor divisible jewels. More importantly, the commodity chosen as a medium must be of a luxury. The human desire for luxuries are unlimited, and therefore luxury goods are always in demand and will always be acceptable. Wheat is a luxury in an undefined civilization, but not in a prosperous society. Cigarettes ordinarily would not serve as money, but they did in post-World War II Europe, where they were considered a luxury. The term luxury goods implies that the scarcity is in the high value, in the high unit value. Having a high unit value, such as good, is easily portable. For instance, an ounce of gold is worth a half ton of pig iron. So he goes into it, and I'm going to have to catch you all up into that. So basically what he was laying out which items could actually be a form of money, but even within those items, some of them have some limitations because of what they are. Their overall high value, their high valueness comes in to play into a lot of different ways. Is it durable? Okay. Then sometimes some things become high value because of circumstances, like cigarettes in World War II became a form of money because it was a luxury to have it. And so people would be willing to give up what? This is the bartering system. This is where the bartering system comes in, and some things become more highly sought after as a luxury, and that is a form of money. So what am I saying? It's very important for you to become a prepper, so that you can establish what the value of things are, and then acquire those things that are considered valuable or will be valuable in the future. It will do you really good, because that's the only way that you're going to bring your overall levels of leverage down to zero. And when your levels of leverage is zero, it doesn't matter what economic climate is in, you thrive, because you're based off of money, not cash. You're based off of real value, not cream. Corruption rules everything around me. It's not cash. It's corruption. Corruption rules everything around me. That's really what that means to me. So, listen, everyone, real quick, let me check. Be mindful of what's going on in the world. You'll do well. Have to do well. And you'll be able to endure and put yourself and your family into a position of advantage. Remember, silver and gold is not the only form of money. is one of the most perfect forms of money because of all of what it can do. But there are many forms of money. Cash never has been and never will be a form of money. Very important in this whole thing is this before we get out of here. Life sustains itself off of money. But we have to remove what man told us money is because man lied. Man can't create money. Man can only preserve, use, and maintain it. Can't create it. This was all created by the great creator, absent of man's hands. So, because everything that man creates is cream. Corruption rules everything around me. So just wanted to express that to you all and be mindful of it all, and you'll do fine. Just want to say much love, much respect to everyone. It's never goodbye. It's always we'll see you later. And before you ask for a fortune, make sure to give one away. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.